residential technology, lighting specialist to arc residential technology.
Welcome to Residential Tech Talks. I'm Jeremy Glowacki, executive editor of Residential Tech Today. This week, Aaron Amy joins us from San Mateo, California, where he is CEO of Brilliant, the company he co-founded in 2015 as a mass market solution for home control and home automation. You may know Brilliant as the company with the sleek all-in-one on-wall user interface with side-by-side touchscreen and touch slider lighting dimmers that can be installed anywhere that there's a standard light switch. Brilliant recently announced a $40 million Series B financing, which will allow the company to expand its product offerings and double down on its sales strategy for single-family home builders, multifamily developers, property managers, and professional integrators. Aaron Amy, thanks for joining me today on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Aaron, my motivation for having you on the podcast is really to talk about this next stage of development for Brilliant, which it's a product that I've followed for a while and thought was a really cool addition into the smart home world, having seen a lot of integration of really expensive home control products and some DIY type products, but nothing that really had that sort of feeling of a pro level product that could also be affordable for somewhat average consumers. Before I really wanted to dive into the brand, I learned a little bit about your background, and I thought this is the typical tech entrepreneur. He's probably one of these guys who took stuff apart, tech apart when he was a kid, had hid the box under that bed when he didn't put it together right. All this stuff, you know, that I've heard from so many of these entrepreneurs and technologists that I've interviewed over the years. And then and you've got 100 patents to your name. And then I saw an interview with you and found out that that's not at all how you grew up. And it was a rather off the grid, rural type of upbringing. Can you just tell me a little bit before we get into the tech talk about that upbringing? What were you, what brings someone in modern America? You're not growing up at the turn of the other century. You're probably in the 60s and 70s. What was that lifestyle? Were you a farming family, or what was the background?
Yeah, it's a little bit unusual, and it wasn't just one thing. You know, I kind of moved from place to place and situation to situation. But there were several years of my childhood where we were without electricity, without even running water, and you know, growing much of our own food. This was in rural New Hampshire. And you know, my parents were educated, and I mean, many farmers are also educated, but they weren't, you know, born into a farming situation. This okay. was really a decision that my mother made to try to, you know, live a simpler life, and one that was for some complicated reasons below the poverty level. And so, you know, we were living on very, very, very little money. I think our family income for a family of, you know, four or five was about $6,000 a year. And, you know, in a way, I think that it helped me with technology because you have two things. The first is that I actually lived through a century or more worth of technological progress. I think that most people sort of start out with a baseline set of assumptions that the world has always been the way that it was when they were a kid, and then they see it from there. Whereas for me, I had, you know, a century of progress to catch up to, and then I wanted to keep continuing on that trajectory. You know, why wouldn't things keep evolving at that kind of a pace? So perhaps a little bit more of an awareness of all of the technology around us that that a lot of people take for granted. The other thing was, I got completely obsessed with technology even when I didn't have much access to it. And I was teaching myself how to program computers before I'd ever even seen a computer, and was literally writing code by the light of a kerosene lantern. And, you know, I think that, you know, reinforced to me how much I, you know, cared about it, what my level of passion was for it. And perhaps, you know, we all rebel a bit against our upbringing and want to change our circumstances. And there may have been an element of that in my fascination with computers, which were, in the consumer sense, a very new phenomenon when I was a kid. You know, the idea that I could actually get my hands on one someday was really exciting to me. And then when I was 12, I moved into a situation where I had access to a mainframe computer and some early PCs, and just threw myself into writing code on them nonstop. And I ended up publishing probably 50 or 60 commercial software packages by the time I ever went to college. You know, was actually lived in India for a while after that as well, doing a research project that we had funding from the Ford Foundation for, using computers to analyze traditional North Indian raga music. And, you know, so sort of got started on that path where as soon as I had access to technology, that's all I wanted to do. That's all I cared about. And so in a way it sort of may have accelerated me because I had all this pent up urge to innovate.
Well, how do you know about coding before you see a computer? Are you reading magazines or something? How's this something?
Yeah, magazines and books.
Yeah, just going to the library. That's the old fashioned way, right? The pre-internet days of just finding books to read
For younger listeners, we should probably explain that there was a time when libraries contained books and magazines and not just cafes.
Right. Or video rentals, right?
Exactly.
Oh, man. That's I just had to ask you about that because it just was not your typical path to tech. But then you look at your LinkedIn profile, and I see the companies that you've been a part of and founded and successfully exited. And it wasn't a path that's a smart home path. There weren't a lot of technical developments in that area. There were a lot of software things and shopping apps and things or technologies. What is it about that pathway though that eventually led you to home automation or smart home product like Brilliant?
Yeah, there are two things really. The first is that I've always been fascinated by that intersection between technology and the real technological, physical, real non-technological physical world. And I think the common thread in the things that I've worked on over the years is this connecting to the world outside of you know, the insular world of just software. So for example, my last company was Shopkick. That was a retail technology company, but not an online e-commerce company. It was, you know, shopping in the physical world. How do we transform that experience and so on? And similarly, some of the companies that I've founded or been involved with have been combinations of hardware and software. Others have been purely software. But I think they all or mostly all have that thread of, you know, what impact does this technology have in the real world? And then the other thing is I always try to look and see what is the next big thing. And I had been fortunate enough in my career to be involved with microcomputers during the microcomputer revolution of the early 80s. And then, you know, with an internet company in the 90s, a mobile company in the 2000s. And now I think that the home is the next great battlefield of technology. And I think it's a platform that's on a par with these other platforms that have proven to be incredibly significant. And not only significant in the impact that it has financially, but also the impact that it has on people's lives, because our homes are really important to us. We live there. It's our personal space. And we've put a lot of extraneous technology into the homes over the years, but the homes themselves have remained remarkably untouched by technology when you compare them to any of our other spheres of life. And that is rapidly changing now. And what I saw was that in the midst of this enormous opportunity that's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars, you know, it's a really significant opportunity, that the user experience was being a bit neglected. And nobody was really unifying all of these different systems together and thinking about what is the user experience within the home. And you have, you know, older home automation companies that certainly have their own answers to this thing, but they're not answers that are suitable to every homeowner, every renter, every person. You know, they're very expensive. They're very complex. They require a lot of work, even just to make minor changes to and to maintain. And that's what, you know, a lot of the folks listening to this specialize in. And there's a deep expertise that comes with that. These are very valuable, but at the same time, they're not there for every home. Mm-hmm. And clearly, in the future, every home is going to be smart, because smart technology transforms the experience of being in a home in ways that are really, really valuable. And I lived this firsthand when I was doing a home renovation project, and I wanted to see what's the current consumer state of the art. And I put in a whole bunch of different consumer grade smart home things in my home. And I found that individually they were good. You know, they had transformed a lot since the last time I had put smart tech in my house, when it was really a hobbyist thing. Mm-hmm. But the experience of having them all in my house was actually terrible. I hated using my house. I had a phone with a dozen different apps on it, and in order to turn on my lights when I'm sitting on the couch, I got to go get my phone. I got to authenticate myself to it. I got to scroll around to the right page of apps. I got to launch the app, wait for that to come up, navigate some menus. By the time you get to anything, you resent the fact that you have any smart tech in the house at all, because it's just easier to get up and turn the light on. Mm-hmm. So I felt like there was a big gap in the market in terms of, you know, creating that experience for technology. And that's really what inspired us to start Brilliant.
Well, I think that brings us to a common thread with a lot of folks who I've seen get into this business as an entrepreneur, that frustration of experiencing something that wasn't quite fully baked or priced the way that they think it should be priced. And I think that you've kind of connected with that common thread. But what I really like about what you've come up with Brilliant is finding what is that space in the home that people gravitate toward to control things. And it's that light switch. We all know what it's like to go flip a light switch on and have it respond immediately. And having a product that can be installed without extra wiring is pretty clever. What was the original thought process through it? Did you come up with that right away as you were developing a solution, or did you go through different iterations to get there?
Yeah. I mean, that was, if you'll pardon me, the real light bulb moment was realizing that the light switch was a very special entry point in the home. We didn't commit to the product and to starting the company until after we had that idea. That was the kind of aha moment that made us feel like, okay, not only do we have an idea of the kind of thing that's important, but now we have a specific idea of the right way to put it into the homes. And light switches, as you're saying, are really special. And there are really three reasons why. The first one is there's at least one in every room. And so when you think about where you want to be able to control things in your home, it's probably not just in a single place. There may be several places throughout the home, certainly the major living areas, the bedrooms are nice to have controllers in, et cetera. Really anywhere that you're going to want to be changing things around, you might want to have a screen there. And screens, we can talk about this in more depth as well, but I think screens are really important. Voice control can't be the primary modality. Mm-hmm. And so That's the first reason. Like they're everywhere, so you can decide where it is that you want to control things from within your home, and there will be a light switch in those places. The second thing is there are already holes in your walls and already wires running to them. Or if it's new construction, then you're already going to do these things. So there's no additional infrastructure that you need to build within the home. You don't need to, you know, rip out the walls and run low voltage wiring around there, or if you're again, in new construction, you don't have to delay the drywall work in order to have a different contractor come in and do that before you can seal up the walls. And so it's much more harmonious with the overall construction project. And, you know, it's got power running to it. So you don't have to run cords and you don't have to have batteries. It's just a really great thing. And also it controls the lights. So you know, the lights are actually the things that you change the most as you move around the house and, you know, switch from cooking to eating to watching a movie or whatever. The lighting always changes, and other things, music and locks and climate and so on, may also change, but lighting always changes. So having smart lighting is important. So you sort of kill two birds with one stone there. And the third reason why, and perhaps the most fundamental, is that the light switch is already the home control that you're using most often. Mm-hmm. Because you're always changing the lights. If you don't have a smart home, you're running around and you're doing something with the light switch every time you enter or exit a room. So you're already accustomed to using something there to control your house. And I analogize this to an experience that I had in the mid-90s when I was working at Philips, and we were working with Nokia on, you know, plans for the very first smartphone. And at the time, you may remember PDAs were a big topic of discussion, yeah. Personal digital assistants, you know, and there were a couple early ones out on the market that you might carry in your pocket as well, and it would have your address book and, you know, calendar and stuff like that. But the insight was, well, people have already decided that they're willing to give up real estate in their pocket to put a cell phone there. And we don't know for sure whether they're really going to put a second device in their pockets or not. Why don't we take advantage of the fact that they're already going to have a cell phone there, and we'll give it all the additional functionality. And then it turned out that there was a lot of synergy there as well, because, well, this thing already needs a way to communicate, and now your PDA is connected without having to do anything extra, and so on. But there's the same kind of thinking. People are already using this to control the lights. Why not show them who's at the door when somebody rings the doorbell? Why not give them control over climate, over locks, over all the different home automation scenes that they might want to set up, and so on? So this was why realizing that we could do something in a light switch form factor was really a fundamental breakthrough. And then the second piece to that was to do so with a modern distributed technology architecture where there's no closet full of servers anywhere. All you have to do is put these devices in where you normally put light switches, and then they talk to each other, and they are the connectivity hub, and they are collectively the sort of decision-making and execution apparatus of the home without the need for a central server architecture.
Yeah, I mean, that to me just blows my mind, because I'm so used to all these black boxes and the custom integration business of making all this stuff work. And even your most basic home, you know, smart home kind of product seems to have a little connector to the router or the access point. And to be able to just do this all decentralized is a revelation. And I also really appreciate that you took that light switch, but you didn't take away the light switch. You added a touch panel, and you also have those slide dimmers. So the person that walks up, they're going to quickly figure out intuitively, oh, I can still turn up the light right there in that same spot that next to it is a little touch panel, which has so much more, you know, going on visually. You can figure out what it is pretty quickly as well. So to have that blend, it's not typical. It seems like a very original idea there. Surprised that no one thought of it or got there before you did. But for instance, I have a touch panel inside next to it. I've toggled dimmers. It's extra things on the wall that, frankly, starts to get a little bit busy from an aesthetic standpoint. And it's also just not as intuitive because you're touching on different things and kind of control the same stuff if you want to. But anyway, that's really great. And then you've managed to keep it sleek as well. You don't have this giant thing sticking out from the wall. So you've maintained that aesthetic quality of just a simple switch, right?
Yeah, this was a lot of work to miniaturize it to the point where it could be, you know, really thin and not even noticeably thicker than the plate that you already have there for a light switch, and also to introduce your modern solid state controls that were still simple and intuitive for people to understand. So we did a lot of testing on that to come up with those dimmer grooves where, you know, we would just kind of have people who didn't know anything about it, okay, you walk into a room, you see this, how do you turn on the light, and make sure that they were able to do those things simply. And we found that, you know, with the sliders, that the dimming was really, really intuitive. know, even if they don't immediately know that they can tap it to turn the light on and off, they can do that. And then the worst case that they would do is to tap the screen. And then that goes from the, you know, the family photos and so on that you may be displaying as a digital picture frame to immediately give you the controls there as well. So There was really no situation in which somebody unfamiliar with it would be confused by it because they could get to the functionality that they needed right away. And that was really a guiding principle for us, is that you can't make anything worse. So by putting a panel there, you don't now want to make it slower to turn the lights off and on, or harder to dim them, or anything like that. Now, we added a lot of functionality, so you can remap them so they're controlling different lights than the ones they're physically wired to, or they're controlling the volume of your Sonos system, or they're controlling the level of your smart blind, you know, shades, or any number of different things like that. But the basic functionality has to be undisturbed. And the aesthetics really matter, because this is people's homes, you know, and you care a lot about the appearance of your homes. We found out, for example, people don't want giant screens. You know, we make four different SKUs because you can replace a single switch or a row of two or three or four. We thought about making a big screen, you know, so the three or the four, you have a bigger screen. People didn't like the bigger screens. It dominates the room too much. You know, the five inch vertical screen was just about right, where you can have all of the UI for the things that you need to see. If there's someone you're talking to, you can see who it is. You know, it's big enough, so a little postage stamp isn't going to do it. But at the same time, it's not so big that it dominates the room, and it can be an accent to the room. And in fact, more than 2/3 of the Brilliant controls out there have family photos uploaded to them, so they're actively being used as picture frames. Of course, they can be configured to be off, or they can be off or on at different times of day, or they can be motion sensing. You know, there's a lot of configurability there. But fundamentally, the most common mode that people use them in is as a digital picture frame. And then we also make them in 6 colors, because you know, you may want to match a decor with a different faceplate and so on. But that was one of the things we realized really early on, was that the industrial design mattered enormously. And we're really an experience company. We're a user experience company. So we've invested a lot in both the physical ID, but even more so the software, and trying to make that as simple and easy to use. There's a paradox that I've seen time and time again in technology. As technology advances and devices become smaller, cheaper, more capable, et cetera, when you try to go into a more mainstream market, you'd think, well, this thing costs 95% less than the previous solutions, so it can be less capable. The opposite is true. The standards that people have in consumer markets are actually higher than the standards that people have in professional markets. They expect it to just work. They expect it to be perfect. I think the first time I ran across this was when I was working in early video conferencing systems in the early 90s. And we were selling the enabling technology to PictureTel and VTel and, you know, CLI, all the early video conferencing companies. And these guys were selling systems that cost $50,000, required multiple ISDN lines, and gave you a kind of terrible video picture, you know, SIF resolution, maybe 10, 15 frames a second. And then we wanted to go mainstream. And we found out that over a standard telephone line, which has much less bandwidth, this was pre-digital, people's frame of reference was television. If it looked worse than television, they didn't want it. So for the $300 product, you had to be 20 times better than the $50,000 product. And, you know, you see that again, ironically, with kind of the same price points in smart home, where, you know, we have to have a much better experience of using it than a very high-end system does, because the people who are putting into their homes aren't technology enthusiasts, aren't excited about the idea of having technology in the home. They just want the benefits, and they want them there, you know, completely rock solid, reliable all the time, easy to use, easy to understand, easy to change. And so, you know, that was the challenge that we took on as a company. And, you know, we've been gratified by the traction that we're getting in there. Now, that doesn't mean that the installers don't play a really critical role in this, right? If you're an integrator, the shift is really from a very small number of projects that are individually very expensive to being a, to opening the door to doing a very large number of projects that are individually smaller, particularly working with builders who are in new construction, where you can go in and install a system in 1,000 homes in a community, or in 500 apartments in a big apartment building, and it'll go into every single one of them. So you know, you might look at it and go, you know, wait a minute, you know, where's the business going? Yeah. The answer is the business is going to higher volumes, and that's really the trend that we see.
Right. And there are other things that can still be added to that installation in terms of the speakers and Sonos systems and things like that, that help make the whole experience, not just the control system, but
absolutely
clear up that labor part of it, which we have a labor shortage in everything right now. So to be able to simplify part of the installation and still be a value to the builder or homeowner, that would, I think, be a business opportunity for integrators as well. We'll continue our conversation with Aaron Amy after a break.
For 25 years, Leon has been dedicated to creating innovative products that mix art with audio and design with technology. Knowing that technology is an integral part of modern interior design, Leon's collection of customizable speakers and technology concealment solutions is designed to deliver both sound and style to any space. From signature soundbars that seamlessly blend in with the display to art and frames that turn your TV into a work of art, Leon's products are built to order and handcrafted just for you to ensure a perfect match every time. Visit www.leonspeakers.com to learn more.
Welcome back. We're talking with Aaron Amy, CEO of Brilliant. I'm Residential Tech Today Executive Editor Jeremy Glowacki. Aaron, we started talking about the features of Brilliant and some of the things that I liked about the product and what it makes it special are the intercom, the video intercom aspect, which again, in a high priced, you know, integration system, you can get that, but to do it for the price point that you're talking about, to be able to integrate the Ring alarm or the Ring doorbell as part of that, or the room to room, is a great feature. It's not just a lighting dimmer. It's not just a digital picture frame. You're also adding that intercom feature.
Yeah, no, we've put in all sorts of different features sort of built into the baseline product. And a lot of that is based on piggybacking on the kinds of dramatic improvements in technology that have accompanied the rise of smartphones and of tablets and so on. So things like miniaturized digital cameras that used to be extremely expensive, you know, now are just a few dollars to include in there, and you can do so without adversely impacting the thickness of the device or the thermal properties or the cost. So we really take advantage of that. We build in smart, you know, voice assistant capabilities, so you can talk to Amazon's voice assistant directly through our product. We have the camera is built in, so as you say, you can do room to room video intercom. You can also use them for remote video monitoring for sort of light duty security. You can also use them. We have a baby cam feature where if you have a sleeping baby in the next room, you can just kind of keep an eye on things and get alerted if there's an issue there. So there are a lot of different kinds of things that we've built in there. You know, we have an ambient light sensor. We actually have temperature sensor. We have a lot of things in there we haven't even launched features around yet. But they're there as hardware capabilities. And that's one of the things that we do also is that the software is constantly being updated. So there are new features rolling out over time, you know, as we implement the software for them.
Yeah. And you talk multi-family housing as well, MDUs. What are the challenges of that market in particular versus the single family home?
Yeah, we've more recently entered the multifamily market. You know, the basic evolution was, you know, first both going to consumers and going through the integrators into more retrofit kinds of situations. Then moving into the new construction market, which is typically, again, in partnership with an integrator, where either the integrator brings us to the home, or increasingly we're kind of having the discussions with the builders and then bringing in an integrator into the deal. Mm-hmm. And then now we've just, you know, made a big move into multifamily. And there are two big things that are different about multifamily. The first is the universe of integrations. While there's significant overlap, there are a new set of needs there. You know, you're not going to need a Ring doorbell because, you know, in a building with 400 apartments, you're not going to have 400 doorbells out there. Instead, you know, we integrate, for example, with Butterfly MX, which is a system that, you know, lets you, it's an updated version. Think of it as like a Ring doorbell for multifamily, where you can specify which apartment it is that you're trying to get into. And then mm-hmm. you have that same kind of, there's a call, you can see, you can talk to the person, et cetera. And, you know, similarly, access control within the building is often with a different set of companies. There are just a lot of new integrations. They're very concerned about insurance law. So we integrate, for example, with the Honeywell leak detectors and so on. But then the bigger piece of it is that, as well as those pieces that are required for the tenant experience, which has really been our bread and butter, you also have additional needs, because if you're an operator of even one multifamily complex, if you think about the difference between being a single family homeowner versus managing 500 apartments, there's a significant difference. But even more than that, these companies aren't managing 500 apartments, they're managing 20,000 apartments. And you know, when you're operating on this kind of scale, there are a lot of opportunities to capture operational efficiencies and energy efficiencies within that universe of apartments. For simple example, if you've got 20,000 units under management, a good occupancy rate is 95%. Mm-hmm. So that means there are going to be 1,000 vacant units at any given time. If there are 1,000 empty apartments and you're cooling them down in the Arizona summer, or you're heating them up in the Minnesota winter, both of these being places that we have multifamily deployments, you are spending an enormous amount of money needlessly on energy. Now, on the other hand, you actually need to be cooling them down or heating them up if you have a tour, if you've got a prospective tenant who's coming in to see them, because you don't want them to walk into a 110 degree apartment and go, this is terrible out there. It's not a comfortable place, right? So, you know, we integrate with the building management systems, and we know when somebody is moving out. We know when somebody is moving in. We know when there's a tour scheduled. So we can put it into an energy efficiency mode. We can enforce that when there are contractors coming in, and you know, they may be painting the walls and so on. They're not going to work in 110 degree temperature, but nor are they going to change it when they leave. So we can automate all that. But then a couple hours before a tour is scheduled, we'll put the climate control in a mode that's going to ensure that it's comfortable and welcoming for the prospective tenant when they come and see it. A lot of different things like this. Multifamily companies are also looking for ways to connect with their tenants and communicate and foster that sense of community. And there are ways that we can do that. So there's a lot in that market that's mm-hmm. a little bit different, along with a lot that's shared. The thing that we really bring to the table that's unique in that market is the tenant experience, where the other companies in multifamily have been very, very focused purely on the operator issues, mm-hmm. Which are a really important part of the picture. You have to solve those. But the basic value proposition there that smart home holds for apartments is rent the apartment faster for more money. And you only get that if a prospective tenant is excited by the smart apartment experience that they see and falls in love with it, and if it shows really well. And the thing that's really unique about Brilliant in this regard at the price point is that the tenant can immediately see, oh, what's this on the wall? And there's a little hang tag over it, and it tells them a couple things to try out. And so it surfaces the investment that a builder in either single family or multifamily has made in smart tech. You know, chances are they put in a smart thermostat. Chances are they put in a smart lock. Chances are they might have some smart lighting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't show well mm-hmm. by itself. Because, you know, what are you expecting a realtor to pull out a mobile phone and start launching apps? You know, that's not going to happen. And even if it did, it doesn't impress anyone. But when it's right there in the wall, then it feels like something, oh, I've never seen this before. And it's exciting, whether it's to a home buyer or a home renter. And so that's something that we think is really important in all markets, is what's it like to actually live with this technology?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to talk about the financing and what goals you have going forward. But before we get into that and wrapping up, I did want to sort of circle back to the installation of the product and understanding just a little bit more for either the professional installer or the consumer who buys it direct, what's involved in getting a system set up. So I get that you take out the traditional light switch, if that's what it is you're replacing. And it seems like there must be a pretty straightforward wiring scenario with Romex and that situation, that setup. And then what do you need to do then? Go through an app to set it up, or how does it work when you're initially getting everything connected?
Yeah. So there are two pieces to it. There's the physical installation, and then there's the configuration of the system. And we've made the physical installation extremely simple because it literally installs just like light switches.
Okay.
So in a new construction situation, you're going to have the junction box there, you're going to have the wires there, you can just connect them up and, you know, just like you would a normal light switch, install it. In a retrofit situation, you just have to, you know, take out the screws for the old light switch and connect up the wires. The only possible wrinkle is if you have a house that's pre-1974 electrical codes and doesn't have a neutral wire in the box, like any smart switch, we do draw a little bit of power, so we need that neutral wire. Most houses have that if they've been either built since 74 or renovated since 74. So that's really simple, and that's enormously easier than anything else on the market. Now, the configuration component of it, we've made it as simple as we possibly can, and we continue every day to work actively on simplifying it further. That said, I mean, we all know if you're setting up a system and it has a dozen different smart devices all over the place, there's going to be a fair amount of configuration work that still has to happen. Now, we've designed Brilliant to be a consumer configurable device. That doesn't mean it's always a consumer configured device. And, you know, typically, for example, working with builders, they'll work with an integrator that's doing the initial configuration and setup, but then we're able to transition that over to the homeowner for ongoing changes. Mm-hmm. And that's really a key there. So yes, there's a mobile app. We have mobile apps for both iOS and Android, and that can walk you through the installation and so on. One of the things that we've done that's really important in the multifamily arena is, if you have 500 apartments, why would you want to go through the same configuration steps in every single one of them? So you can actually specify, hey, there's apartment type A, type B, type C. And then you can just say, okay, unit 312 is, you know, type B. And then you can just scan QR codes for each of the Brilliant products that are there and have that all configured. And we make not only the smart home controls, I should say, but we also have a smart dimmer switch. Mm-hmm. Which can be used. Yeah, actually, it's kind of an interesting topic because smart lighting is very important, and you know, we utilize that same slider technology that we were talking about earlier. That is really unique within the lighting space. But on top of that, you are able to access all the home automation features of Brilliant by using a gesture like a double tap to run a scene. Even with a very inexpensive switch that you could put all through the house that doesn't have a screen or microphones or anything like that. Getting a little bit off the configuration question. But the configuration part is simplified as much as it can be and no more. So there's still some work to do in connecting up the third-party devices,
right,
and making sure that everything's working. But we're trying to take as much of the routine work out of it as we can.
Yeah, and you work with a lot of smart locks, and obviously you mentioned the voice control. You've got a Z-Wave hub that could be added if you wanted to add Z-Wave devices. Sonos obviously is a big part of the integration as well for the music control. And then you have this new round of financing. And I was just curious, how is this financing going to help? I would imagine some of it is just getting the product out to more places, you know, getting the name recognized. I have to say, when I was doing my research, suddenly my iPhone, it's serving up, I don't know where I was, maybe probably Facebook, and all of a sudden I'm getting all kinds of brilliant ads. So congratulations on the digital marketing on that one. I love when that happens, because it's the tech companies that know what they're doing, that's going to happen. And I'm often researching tech companies, so it's going to show up in my feed. But what is your goal there for that $40 million Series B financing?
Yeah. So we just announced the Series B. That's a $40 million round that was co-led by Next 47 and Celesta, and with heavy participation from August Capital, that led our Series A, and from Miramar and from Peak State, and a number of other investors that are very active in prop tech, hardware, smart home kinds of spaces. So a couple of things. I mean, the main thing is it's really a growth round. We have proven the product out. We've proven the demand for it across several channels, but we're still small, and we have a really small sales team and small scale marketing and so on. So this really allows us to take where we've proven that it works, and just drive it to be a larger company. So it's a little bit of an unexciting answer, perhaps. It's not that we're going to suddenly be in the rocket ship business, but we do have a number of new products under development. And I already talked about the Brilliant Command Center, which is the SaaS service for multifamily. So that's the biggest one that we've talked about publicly. You'll see a whole series of new product announcements for us. But more than that, it's just being there in the channel, working with people, having expanded training capabilities, expanded support capabilities, expanded sales capabilities, extended basically any way that we can support our partners in the channel, to have the staff to do that amidst this backdrop of rapid growth.
And one of the, backers of the financing was Resideo Technologies, which is the home automation arm of Honeywell Security, which is a partner company to begin with your integrations, correct?
Yeah, Resideo has been a great partner from the start. Well, actually, since before they were even Resideo, they did spin out of Honeywell, and they own the residential technology that is branded Honeywell. So they've been a phenomenal partner right from the start, and their participation around was just fantastic, because it really helps cement the kind of partnership that we have, the kind of working relationship we've integrated with their products since the time that we launched, and we're always increasing the footprint of those integrations. So we're moving beyond climate control and leak detection, the kinds of things that we've already been doing. And that's certainly amongst the announcements that you'll see in the coming months, are additional integrations there. But they're just phenomenal partners, and also have just an enormous degree of trust within the channels, and see the whole structure of things very similarly to us. What's important to us is to partner with folks who are approaching the channel similarly. They also have a lot of business with new construction, as well as with retrofit, and a lot of relationships all through the channel. So I think that they're great partners, and we're excited to have them as a part of the brand.
I would imagine part of the challenge of your growth is staying on that path that you've created and having a product that is simple, relatively speaking, to install and to use as an end user, which is the main thing. Adding features without getting too crazy about it, like getting off track or trying to do things that aren't really in that core direction of the company originally. The thing is, you've been able to add these things and software additions along the way. Is there a kind of a guard rail that you put up that says, let's not get too crazy here. Like, we need to make sure that we're not going to complicate things.
Yeah, I think that's really a key. Any new feature that we roll out, we look at it ruthlessly in terms of how can we simplify it? How can we make this, you know, easier? We test it. We agonize over it. I think supposedly Voltaire, maybe it's apocryphal, wrote a letter once and prefaced it with, I apologize for the length of this letter. If I'd had more time, I would have written a shorter one. And, it's true that making things simple is often the hardest thing to do, not only in writing a letter, but in technology for sure. Because, you know all the things you can do with technology, and the most straightforward thing to do is just put them all on the screen. That's almost certainly the wrong thing to do. You want to really think carefully about how people are going to use it and how they're going to feel when they're presented with something, and what are the things that need to be right there at their fingertips, and what are the things that need to be moved into, more of a configuration options area where they aren't going to be confused by it unless they really need to see it. So there's a lot of that thinking that goes on all the time, and that is our guiding principle there. Our mission is to unify the smart home and make it simple for everyone to use. And particularly as you move beyond the sort of specialist smart home enthusiast folks and into mainstream homeowners and renters, you need it to be dead simple. You need it to really just work, and to work reliably, and to have the things that they want to do available there in a way that's really straightforward. And there's no magic to it. There's just a mentality. There's a skill set, of course, to user experience design, but it's more than anything else, a mentality and an iterative process of just asking yourself, is this really the simplest we can make it? Is there any way we can make this easier?
Yeah. Yeah, to come at it from a consumer mindset rather than a technologist mindset. Maybe that goes back to the simplicity of your upbringing, where it's like, let's not complicate things, like, because we can do it. I want to circle back to a little teaser that you put in early and an answer that we didn't really follow up on, which was about voice control and why it can't just be voice control, why you need that user interface, that touch interface. Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that, voice technology has made great strides. We all know it's still not that great. But even assuming it was perfect, right? And let's assume a future in which, and I used to be a computational linguist, so I know how hard it is and how much I'm glossing over with this. But let's assume now that the voice technology is really perfect. Now, is it ready for to be the primary or sole modality of control? It still isn't. And the reasons are, first of all, voice is intrinsically not discoverable, right? To give a simple example, you walk into a room, there's a light overhead, and there's an Amazon Echo Dot sitting on a table. What do you say to turn the light on? You don't know. You have to know what the name is of that light. Hmm. Now, how do you find out what the name is of that light? Well, you have to, it gets really complicated. And when you have a system that's really designed to be used by everyone, the discoverability has to be there. You have to be able to very easily see what are the capabilities that are there in the home and how can I access that. Otherwise, you get pretty frustrated trying to figure out, oh, can I control this light? If someone's a call, can I lock the door? What? It's a lot in here. Can I turn on the AC? And you don't know how to do these things. And you don't even know if those capabilities are present. Whereas if there's a screen, you can just easily see it and do it with a single touch. And that gets also into a second reason why, which is visual processing happens a lot faster than verbal processing. Mm. Right. You and I are talking here for the better part of an hour, and it would take a couple minutes to read the transcript of it. Now, if you're saying, resume playing my music, voice commands are great for that. But if you're thinking, I'm in a kind of a weird mood, which one of my playlists am I kind of in the mood for? You don't want to listen to, a recitation of dozens of different playlists, and then you'd have some clunky mechanism for saying, yeah, that's the one. Number 52. And similarly, it's not good for anything with a closed loop of control. So, you know, if you want to set the volume of your Sonos system to exactly the right level that you want, if you have a physical control that you can move, that's really easy. You do it by sound. If you want to set your dim level of the lights to something, but with a voice command, how do you do that? You have to set it to, 52%, nope, 68%, nope, 61%, until you find the right level. So I think there are some intrinsic limitations of voice technology, even if we assume that all of the technical issues are solved with it, that mean that it will be a very important complementary modality, but it'll never be the primary control modality. You really want that visual interface as well as voice.
And last, how much of a home automation future is there as far as what you're trying to develop? An intuitive, you've got a aspect of motion sensor and things which could obviously trigger a reaction, but is there a goal there of having things just happen, like having it on maybe a schedule with the lighting and that type of thing, or is it all manually triggered through your system?
This is a really, really interesting field. So the short answer is yes. Home automation is really, really essential to taking, getting the most out of all the smart home capabilities that you have, right? And so with Brilliant, you can define these scenes that incorporate any different thing that you have in the house. They can be lights and music and locks and climate and whatever gets involved in a scene. If you're going to bed, it's going to maybe turn off all the lights and the music and lock the door and turn the temperature down. And, of course, this is really critical. And then you can trigger that on a variety of different things. You can put it on a timer. You can have the timer based on circadian cycles, relative to sunrise and sunset, or you can trigger it on motion, or you can have it as a one tap on the control in specific locations where you're likely to do that, or you can have it as a double tap on switch, same way. So I think this is all really, really important. At the same time, I think that the idea that some companies have espoused that you have some magical AI system that learns the way you use your house and then will automatically do things for you is deeply problematic in that it's like there's this distinction between errors of omission and errors of commission, right? Errors of omissions are things that you should have done that you didn't, and errors of commissions are things that you shouldn't have done that you did. And errors of commission are much worse than errors of omission. When we're dealing in almost any sphere of life, we'd far rather have something that could have happened that didn't happen rather than to have something happen that really shouldn't have happened. When we are sitting in a room and the light goes off, that's annoying, right? If we're lying in bed and we're set fast asleep at 4 a.m. and the lights turn on, that's even worse, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that, you want to be very careful about how much autonomy you give these systems. A lot of people who installed Nest in the early days, found this out really quickly, where, you go on vacation and then it takes it 3 days to realize that you're back in the house. And in the meantime, it's acting as if you're on vacation. You don't want that level of autonomy in the technology. So I think making it really, really easy for people to automate things is important, but keep it under their control.
Right.
Because if it's, the robot overlords are deciding what happens in your house next and it's not what you want,
right.
You're having the wrong thing happen once is, 100 times worse than going and doing it yourself when you want it. So, we err on that side of having it under user control rather than just some kind of thing that happens and you don't know why.
Right. Well, that's a good place to stop before the robot overlords kind of take over. So, Aaron, thanks so much for taking all this time to chat with me today.
Thank you so much. Always happy to talk about Brilliant. I really appreciate it.
Aaron Amey is CEO of Brilliant. You can learn more about his company at www.brilliant.tech. That wraps up today's show. If you're new to Residential Tech Talks, please subscribe to the weekly podcast and consider rating and reviewing us wherever you listen or watch us. Also, check out all the latest residential tech news at the magazine's website, restechtoday.com, where you can also subscribe to the bi-monthly print or digital magazine and to our Tuesday and Friday email newsletters. Until next time, please stay safe, stay inspired, and let us know if you have a great story to tell.
Residential lighting specialist to our residential tech. Home automation smart device, home or smart house.